welcome to another exciting episode here at IT Pro TV. I'm your host, Mike Roderick, and today we're continuing on with our CISSP, and specifically, we're going to be diving into the world of risk management. There's a lot of things to talk about with risk management, and who better to talk about it with than Mr. Adam Gordon. How are you doing, Adam?
Just call me Mr. Risky. So I'm doing good. How are you guys? Hopefully everybody's well. So, you know, let's talk about risk. Mike was saying nothing better than to talk about risk on a lovely day. And, you know, I often think about risk when I talk to customers and I work with them. And one of the things we have to think about with risk is, and I think setting the tone right up front is important, is that while risk is critical for us to understand, to identify, and to appreciate, we have to really have knowledge of it, but we also have to keep in mind that not all risks are bad. We'll come back to that theme as we go and we talk more about this, but while we often frame the conversation about risk from an information security perspective as being a negative, right? It's about the bad things that will happen. It's about keeping the bad actors out. It's about making sure the good people get to see data and the bad people don't. Those are all things we have to consider. Ultimately, what we have to understand is that not all risk is negative. And as a result of that, we have to understand that if we don't clearly articulate and understand and identify risk, we run, unfortunately, into a problem. The problem is we may take the wrong action or, in theory, go after the wrong concern because the risk is not well understood. And so we have to think about that and understand that. To that end, let's go ahead and just blow that graphic up a little bit more if we could and get rid of the, there we go. So you'll hear me talking but not see my smiling face, which is probably better for you as opposed to seeing me and not seeing half the graphic. So when you look on the screen in front of you, what you're going to see is a screen capture from one of the NIST documents. This is going to be from NIST 830R1, which is going to be the discussion that we have about just the vocabulary. We talk a lot about terminology. And you'll see we have definitional criteria, or at least boxes that help us to understand terminology with regards to risk. We're going to discuss risk. We're going to discuss threat source. We're going to discuss threat event. We're going to discuss vulnerability. We're going to discuss those terms on the screen. They're going to help us to ultimately get to the bottom on the right where we see organizational risk and we can understand what risk is and why it's important. So let's go ahead and let's start by talking about some of these terms. They're obviously very critical for us and we want to make sure, you know, we understand what they are. And when we start thinking about risk, we have to start thinking about what a threat is, and specifically a threat source. And so when we think about a threat source, we're thinking about something that is going to bring a threat into the organization. This is where threats come from. And so threat sources can also be thought of as threat actors, right? These are the bad people and the bad software, the malware, for instance, things like that, and the bad websites where we get that stuff from, and all the things that potentially can lead us down the road of having a concern or a problem. And threat sources are where things that can potentially, I want to underscore the word potentially do us harm may come from. And so again, this could be a variety of different things. It could be a bad actor. It could be a piece of bad software. It could be a bad configuration. So in other words, we may have a system that has to be configured a certain way. And if it is misconfigured, either purposefully or accidentally, we may have a threat source as a result of that because the misconfiguration may actually lead us to have a complication that can expose a system or potentially information in that system and break confidentiality or impact availability. So these are things we want to think about, right? So when we think about threat sources, we think about where the potential that this particular issue or concern is arising from, where is it coming from? That's what the threat source is. Threat sources initiate threat events, as you see the flow in the diagram. Threat events are going to be things that when carried out in a certain sequence, as we say there, with sequence of actions, activities, or scenarios, when certain things are done a certain way, as a result of that, it is more likely, as we say, exploiting with likelihood of success that something is going to occur. That something, as we said, is traditionally seen as being negative, right? But not always, right? Threat events talk about things that potentially are going to be bad outcomes. But we can talk about the fact that if we interdict and we stop the threat source and the threat event from occurring, then we have been successful. And so not all risks, not all threats that are realized necessarily end badly. We just want to keep that in mind and consider that. So threat events are the sequence of actions, activities, whatever those things may be, that when done or executed in a certain way, lead us to be able to exploit. Exploit is an action word. We're going to take action of some sort to exploit something. That something is called a vulnerability. A vulnerability is going to be a weakness. Typically, that's how vulnerabilities are described. They are weaknesses. A weakness in a system. It could be because of a misconfiguration, as we said. It could be because of some sort of unknown bug or some sort of unknown concern in the software, in the code of a system. And we find that by probing and people doing things to the system, we suddenly discover that there's this hole over here. And if we execute this sequence of keystrokes, then all of a sudden we can take advantage of that. And so that vulnerability, that weakness is discovered, and somebody or something is going to look to take advantage of it, whatever that is, right? So that's a vulnerability. A vulnerability is going to be measured in terms of severity. Is it a vulnerability that is catastrophic, something that if executed on and somebody takes advantage of will just immediately take down our system? Is it something that's minor? You know, it's going to be a nuisance. We don't want it to happen, but if it does, we can live with it. We can deal with it relatively easily. You know, vulnerabilities have effectively a scale associated with them for us to measure how impactful they are going to be. This is going to be vulnerability causing, as we look to the right and the arrow moves over, with some sort of degree of adverse impact. How impactful is the vulnerability? Again, is it a high-level vulnerability, what we would call a critical vulnerability? Is it a medium level? It is, you know, going to be important but not severe. Is it a low-level vulnerability, one that we can live with, and if there is an exploit, we're not going to necessarily have an issue, right? Or at least not one that we can't recover from easily. So we want to make sure we're aware of that. Adverse impact, in other words, is going to measure what that vulnerability means to us if it is realized, if somebody's able to execute some sort of an attack against that weakness that we have uncovered. And then based on that, adverse impact produces, arrow going down on the right-hand side towards the lower right-hand corner of the diagram, organizational risk. Organizational risk, or generically just risk, is going to be the idea, or from our perspective, is going to be the probability or the likelihood, as we often say, that a given threat source, a given threat actor, will exercise a particular vulnerability, will be able to, through threat events, exploit some sort of weakness and the resulting impact that will occur. That is what risk is. So it's the distillation down of a threat source taking on actions or activities or engaging in actions and activities that are called threat events that are exploiting vulnerabilities or weaknesses that lead to some sort of negative impact. That adverse impact is going to be measured with some sort of degree as being ultimately the accumulation of that, or the accumulation of all that ultimately is what we call risk. Now, as I said, risk generically is framed in the negative. Hey, there's this risk over here that if I do these things, that system's going to blue screen or stop working or whatever that may be. But not all risk is bad. Sometimes we take a chance and we entertain or engage the idea that there may be a risk, but ultimately the outcome may actually be positive. And so while we have to understand risk as being negative with regards to security, and information security management of risk is about dealing with the negative consequences, the adverse impacts of vulnerabilities being exploited, we have to also understand that if we are successful at dealing with it and we mitigate, we minimize the risk, and we try to take steps, whatever those may be, we call them countermeasures traditionally, and we use what are called controls to actually implement solutions that will minimize risk. If we apply countermeasures and use controls, we may be successful at forestalling or even navigating away from the risk overall. And in so doing, that risk is no longer realized or recognized in the organization. And because of that, we can say that that risk has effectively been dealt with. It has been pushed off to the side and no longer poses an adverse impact to us. So we just want to make sure we're aware of the language of risk. The language of risk is very critical, very important. All right, so just to recap, right, we were just talking about the flow, the logic of how we deal with risk. Just to recap the vocabulary, it's important for us to understand the following terms. Threat source, right, threat event, want to understand vulnerability, want to understand likelihood, want to understand impact, we just talked about all that. I mentioned countermeasures, that's how we actually deal with the risk, likelihood that it will be a negative outcome. We apply countermeasures to try to offset that. And we want to then also, although I didn't mention it, want to throw out a new term, which is something known as residual risk. Residual risk is the risk that is left over after we go through that whole activity cycle and whatever ultimately does occur. Whatever the risk is and how we deal with that is the risk that is left over in the system. Because we can counteract so much risk, but at that point, there's always going to be something left. Maybe it's an unknown risk that we're not familiar with today. We would call that a zero-day exploit or something that's unknown. At some point, that will become known to us. When that does, we then have to deal with it, and we may walk it through that process, but until we identify it and start figuring it out, it's called residual risk, or referred to as residual risk. So the point is there's always some risk left in the system somewhere. something that may be unknown or unqualified or uncategorized or undetermined until a later date. And whatever that is, that's what we call residual risk. So we just want to make sure we're familiar with that. Having said that, what we then want to do is zero in on, and we're going to go in and look at a new graphic here. We want to go in and we want to take a look at one specific process that is laid out along the lines from the same document, the NIST document that we've been talking about. There is a four-step process. You could see it on the screen in front of you. We want to go through and talk about what the steps are for the risk assessment process. In other words, how do we actually figure out what a risk is? You've got all this great language. We have a threat source, we have a threat event, we have likelihood, we have vulnerability, right? We have impact, we have potentially, as we distill all that down, we have organizational risk. But how do we actually know what the risk is? In other words, how do we figure out what comes out the back end of that process falls into the risk or organizational risk bucket? What we have to do is assess risks and understand how impactful they may be to the organization. And we have a methodology for that. And the methodology, at least the accepted one that most security individuals or security professionals will be thinking of and using today, comes to us from NIST. It's one of several. It's not the only one, I want to be clear, but it's one that more and more people are looking at and starting to standardize on using, which means it's one that you should be familiar with. And so step one is at the top, at the 12 o'clock position, if we're looking at the diagram on the vertical there, right in the middle, it says step one, prepare for assessment. And so when we think about preparing for assessment, we're thinking about making sure that we understand what activities need to occur for us to go in and to ultimately look at risk and assess risk in the organization. So what is that going to mean? It could mean several things. It may mean ultimately that we are going to go in and we're going to have a risk inventory. We're going to have documented a bunch of risks that have to be laid out and that we have to be thinking about so we have effectively the catalog of risks that we want to examine. It could also be that we're doing the fact finding and the assessment in order to understand what the risks are. We're going out and gathering requirements about risks. So this could mean lots of things, but ultimately what it distills down to is a list of risks, a risk catalog or a risk listing that we then want to take into step two, which is conduct assessment. We want to effectively go in, and if you look at the sub gray rectangular boxes that flow below step two in priority order, we're going to identify threat sources and events. We're going to identify vulnerabilities and any predisposing conditions. We're going to determine likelihood that they will occur. We're then going to determine magnitude of impact. This is the whole process we just walked through, and then ultimately determine risk as a result of that. So what we're going to do is we're going to look at the landscape of the business. We're going to do an assessment of the current state, and we're going to figure out what risks may live there as a result, how likely they are to be acted on, how badly they can hurt us if they are realized, and what that ultimately means. That's all part of step two or stage two. Step three is off to the left. Step three, communicate risks. This is very important. We have to communicate risks broadly and widely in the organization to senior decision makers to help them understand what's going on and to all of the people that are going to be involved in managing risk. And then we move over to the right-hand side to step four. That is going to be to maintain the assessment. Over time, in other words, we have to go through and look at the assessment and update it. You know, where most security practitioners, most security professionals miss and fail when it comes to risk is that they go through this whole activity once and they do it the right way and they get it all knocked down and set up. And then they forget that risk is an ongoing dynamic issue or a concern for us. And as a result of that, they forget they got to circle back and assess risk 6 months later, figure out what's new. Right, and add it to the mix, right?
Yeah, your threat sources could potentially change. The things that you have to use against the risks could possibly change. The technologies that it can implement.
Your countermeasures.
The budget that we have available.
And your budget, of course. All of that. So we have to constantly be reassessing. And this is what step four is. You could think of it as an iterative process that takes us back up to step one, in effect, right? And asks us, hey, have we anything new that we want to add to the mix, and let's prepare and let's go back through and let's make sure. So when you bring a new technology online and start offering new services, you got to think about that, right? That would be one thing to consider. So while NIST offers us a risk assessment framework, they are not the only game in town, right? They're not the only way to talk about risk. They're not the only way to think about risk. We want to throw some other things out there for you and want to be able to understand what that may look like. So let's just talk about some additional frameworks or thought processes that help us to broaden the conversation around risk. There is something known as COSO, COSO is an organization that has a risk framework that is going to talk about the control elements around risk and how we set risk up, manage it, and control it. So we think about the control environment, we think about risk assessments and control activities that go into managing risk when we think about five areas of internal control, which is what COSO is really thinking about and focusing on. The five risk areas or the internal areas for control necessary to help us identify and manage risk. I mentioned three already, but let's just bullet them out. Control environments, what they are. Risk assessment, the process for doing that. The control activities, how we're going to actually engage in controls and stipulate what they will be and walk through them. Information and communication mechanisms and monitoring that wraps all that around to be able to understand how to get a handle on all of these things. So COSO talks about five areas of internal control. That's what the framework really is focused on. We have ITIL, or what's known as ITIL, depending on where you come from in the world. IT Infrastructure Library. IT stands for Information Technology Infrastructure Library. ITIL is really focusing on best practices and core practices around service provisioning for IT services within the organization. There is a security element to that and an awareness of risk associated with that in the current version of the ITIL framework. We want to be aware of the fact that we can focus on the five areas or the five process thought areas that ITIL lays out. They are service strategy, service design, service transition, service operation, and what's known as CSI, or continual service improvement, which wraps around all the others, again, iteratively asking us to examine them and to cycle back. So as we go through a whole cycle of strategy, design, transition, operation, so thinking about ideas, kind of laying them out, sketching them out, coming up with what they are in design, building them and then making them into something we can manage in transition, handing them off to operation to go live. When we've done that, we then iterate back through CSI, looking for ways to improve, but also looking for new technologies and new services we have to then go through and do the same process with. So ITIL is all about customer service and IT-focused, IT-centric customer service with a security thought process that comes to bear there as well. This is one of several frameworks that we as IT security professionals would have to be aware of. I've mentioned COBIT already. COBIT is an IT governance framework. It is focused on what we know as GRC, governance, risk, and compliance activities. There are other frameworks like Risk IT that ISACA has in market, what's known as ITAF, the IT Assurance Framework. There are lots of different frameworks that COBIT is going to pair with and can also be used with. And again, as a security professional, we would want to have general knowledge of these. Should you be spending time running out and learning everything there is to know about every one of these frameworks to prepare to become a CISSP? The answer is not necessarily. What we often talk about with being able to prepare for the CISSP is the following. I have marbles in my mouth. What we often talk about and prepare you to think about as a student is the following. We talk about knowledge acquisition from the perspective of mile wide and inch deep knowledge. And what we mean about that ultimately, or what we mean by that, is that we want you to be very broadly aware of all the themes, the theories, the terminology that we're discussing, but we don't want you to go down the rabbit hole in any one area. This is not a vendor-specific exam. This is not a standard-specific exam. You're not being certified as an ITIL practitioner. You can go take classes and figure out how to do that, but that's not this exam. You're not being specified or being certified on ISO compliance. You're just using that as a touchstone to be able to understand how to apply this knowledge. So when we talk about COBIT, we talk about COSO, we talk about ITIL, we're about to talk about some ISO standards, we talk about NIST, five things. All of them are important to the security professional. All of them are part of the toolkit that is a working professional in this industry. You should be able to bring to bear in conversations internally and with customers externally about how you define and manage risk. But any one of them may or may not be appropriate during any given moment. And you have to understand how to use the ones that are to your advantage. You should be aware, in other words, of these. But this is not an exam about these in depth. You put them into perspective, is my point. So ISO, we talked about ISO standards already. ISO 27001 and 27002 are two information security standards that you, among the many that are out there, would want to be aware of generically and broadly for the information security management system framework and the controls associated with them. And ISO 31000, specific to the discussion about risk, are all very important standards that, again, a security practitioner and a professional would want to have some knowledge of. When we think about risk, we have to categorize risk. We've talked about how we get from a threat actor, a threat source, to ultimately deriving risk. But we haven't talked about what happens when we drop risks undefined into that bucket. We call them risks, but what does that really mean? Does it mean that they're bad? As I said, it could mean they are. Does it mean they're good? May or may not. But how do we measure them? There's two ways to measure risk, to qualify or quantify risk. In other words, we have to take different approaches. So when we think about qualifying risk, what we call a qualitative risk assessment, we're thinking about something that is not numerical based, is not a metric based measure, but rather is going to use softer measures. So for instance, we may think about the brand reputation of a company and the impact that a risk may have if there's a data breach or a some sort of a hacking solution that happens, or somebody breaches that company and takes data away from them. We want to think about the fact that the impact to that particular company's reputation may be negatively, perceived, right? Company may have a problem. They may have an image concern. Their customers may say, we don't trust you anymore. Well, what does we don't trust you really mean? Can you measure that? How much don't you trust me? On a scale of 1 to 5. Maybe I was a 5 before, now I'm a 3. Does that mean you're still going to do business with me? I don't know. But it's hard to measure. So some things are not easy to quantify. Quantifiable risk assessment is a measured assessment, and that measured assessment is going to be something that we can show and illustrate for you with a formula. We're going to show you that formula and take a look at what that is, because when we measure risk, what we can do is we can use the formula on the screen in front of you to be able to quantify, to measure risk, to seal it down into something we can hold in our hands and actually assess. The formula has acronyms associated with it. You'll see them in the parentheses at the end of the line after each statement. We just spelled them out for you so you know what they are. The formula is annualized loss expectancy, or AL, is made up of two things, single loss expectancy, SLE, multiplied by that little asterisk or star or snowflake, is actually going to be a multiplication sign. Single loss expectancy multiplied by annual rate of occurrence, or arrow. So we say the formula is actually AL equals SLE times arrow. AL equals SLE times arrow is the formula that we use. And so Mike's going to be kind enough to be able to just type that out for us. And then is going to just show it to you in a representation that's easily consumable, so we can talk about it for just a minute. So let's go through just a practical example with this. Let's apply this to the real world for a minute. Let's say that we have a firewall that we have just gone ahead and installed recently in our company. And that firewall cost us $5,000 to buy, right, to set up. Cost us $5,000. Now, the $5,000 expense that we laid out for the firewall has to be measured, because we have to understand whether that was a good or a bad investment. And this is actually what AL equals SLE times arrow helps us to figure out. Is that $5,000 expense actually going to be a good investment? Is it neutral or is it negative? So we're going to walk through how to figure that out right now. That firewall that cost us $5,000 was really designed to be able to address a concern, in effect, an exploit that happens to us. We can call it a breach. And we're going to say that it happens 6 times a year. So the annualized loss expectancy is going to be 12 months or 1 year, right? So the number, the numerical value for AL is always usually 12 months, which equals 1 year. What we're then going to say is that the value for arrow, the annualized rate of occurrence, is going to be 6, happens 6 times a year or once every 2 months. The single loss expectancy value in this equation is going to be what it costs us every time that that breach occurs. If we say that breach costs us $1,000 every time it happens, right? Then what we have to understand is that the annual loss expectancy, which is measured as a value of a 12-month cycle, right? But the reality is the annualized loss expectancy is really going to be the dollar value of what it costs us when we multiply out SLE times arrow, right? Mm-hmm. So we don't know what that is yet. We got to do the math. But what we do know is that SLE is going to be equal to, I said, $1,000 every time it happens, right? And we're going to multiply that times 6 times a year. So 1,000 times 6 equals $6,000. So what we would say is that the single loss expectancy is 1,000. The annual rate of occurrence is 6 times. That means the annualized loss expectancy, we measure it over a year, is going to be $6,000, which means if we spend $5,000 to buy the firewall and the negative impact from those 6 occurrences throughout the year is $6,000, what that actually tells us is that we made a good investment, because we spent less money than we actually are losing if we allow the attacks to continue. But if we only measure that for 6 months instead of for a year, right? And we say that the attacks occur every 2 months, so then the attacks would occur 3 times instead of 6 over the course of a 6-month period, then it would be a $3,000 annual rate of occurrence would be, right, $3,000. And as a result of that, right, we would wind up saying, you know, or excuse me, annual loss expectancy would be $3,000. I'm looking at the formula and looking at your numbers. I'm reading them backwards. So we would say if we only measured it over 6 months, it wouldn't really be annualized loss expectancy. It would just be loss expectancy at that point. But if we did that, we would say, you know, it's probably not a good investment because we spent more money on the countermeasure than we actually are saving. And so we have to understand what the potential impact of the loss is and then what the potential fix will cost us. As we examine these things, we can then quantify, we can measure in dollar value, hard numbers, whether or not it's a good investment. If something costs as much or less than what it will cost us to allow the attacks to continue, it's typically seen as a good investment. If it costs more than that, it still may be a good investment, but we have to extend the timeline to recoup that investment and see the return. Instead of 12 months, maybe we say it's over 24 months. Because on average, most IT investments are amortized or examined and looked at and depreciated over a 3 to 5 year life cycle, which means it may be anywhere from 36 months to 60 months. And if we look at it in a long-term view, 3 to 5 years, we may actually say that in the second year we're recouping that money and it's still a good investment if we keep it for at least 2 or 3 years. So you want to understand how to quantitatively examine risk. Annualized loss expectancy equaling single loss times annual rate of occurrence, or AL equals sleet times arrow, is how we quantify the measure of risk. Qualitatively assessing risk is looking at things like reputation or soft factors that cannot be measured with dollars and with numbers. This is the key difference between the two. In addition to qualitative and quantitative assessments, we want to also understand, or at least just think about the fact that we have to think about how we deal with risk, right? There are accepted ways of dealing with risk. In this case, as we magically scroll down on the screen, you will see there are 4 risk response approaches that we just want to throw out there, make sure you're comfortable with. These are the 4 classic ways in which we deal with risk. By the way, no particular order, meaning there's no importance of saying avoidance is number 1 versus mitigation being number 4. We just listed them for you. You could list them in any order. Doesn't matter what they are. Just want to know what they are. So avoidance, transference, acceptance, mitigation. Let's just quickly give you an example of each as we wrap up our conversation. So avoidance is about getting out of the way. You may decide not to engage in that behavior and just simply avoid the risk altogether by not doing whatever it is that could lead to the risk, right? So that's one way. May not always be practical, but that's one way to do it. Transference, the classic example of transference of risk, is insurance. You pay somebody to take on the risk in exchange for money. They'll manage it on your behalf, right? So that would be a classic example of transference. Another classic example of transference today is the move to the cloud through a SaaS, PaaS, or IaaS model. We'll talk more about cloud at some point later, but the idea of renting infrastructure on a monthly basis for a fee and giving somebody else the liability of managing it for you is another good example of transference of risk. Acceptance of risk. We're effectively going to engage in the behavior, even knowing there may be a downside or there could be an issue with risk. We're going to accept it as the cost of doing business. That's what you often hear people say. And then mitigation. Mitigation is to minimize the risk. Engage in behavior. Execute countermeasures. Right? Measure risk and try to minimize it at every corner, every turn, every opportunity. That way it is going to be as low in terms of the likelihood to impact us as possible. But remember, we always have residual risk. There's always some risk left over in the organization even after we mitigate.
All right, Adam, a lot of great information, just a ton of information on risk management, defining a lot of the important terms that we're going to need as we continue to discuss risk management, because we're not done yet. We still have quite a bit to go. Risk management, pretty big topic. But we're out of time for this episode, so we're going to have to come back and do it again. So make sure you come back and join us. Remember, you want to attend one of Adam's classes live, shoot us an email, cadam@itpro.tv. For now, signing off, I'm Mike Roderick.
I'm Adam Gordon.
And we'll see you next time.
Take care.